So we're going to begin in Judges today. We're going to begin, actually I'm going to read a couple of verses in Judges 13 at the end to kind of set the stage for Judges 14. And as you remember, we've talked about a lot of things. We talked about the fact that the judge, Samson, is the judge that gets more verses and more space in the book of Judges than any other judge. And it's so important to understand him that they give us information on his parents and the fact that he was a miracle child. And so, you know, all of that is important to understand and take lessons away from the study of Samson's life. You know, we talked about the fact that the angel of the Lord had come to Mrs. Manoah. Manoah's the husband. I don't know what her name is. We're not told. But had basically told her she was barren, that she was going to have a child, and the child would be a boy, and she was to raise him as a Nazarite. And if you want to go back into Numbers, I think it's chapter 6, you can look up Nazarite. But essentially, a Nazarite is a vow that the parents take to dedicate the child, a male child, to the Lord. And there's several ways that works. One is you never cut their hair. Their hair is never cut. The other one is the mother drinks no fermented anything during the time of you know, the gestation and the time she's carrying the baby. And when the baby's born, the baby is never to touch alcohol or anything of the grape, and also to never cut his hair, and also to be holy. The term Nazarite means to be set apart, to be dedicated. So it's a thing that's not taken lightly by parents, because it's a lot of work to do that. And you understand, in the Jewish tradition, there's a lot of rules and regulations about everything. And when you're a Nazarite, those rules and regulations are compounded. You know, can't touch anything dead, because you get defiled ceremonially, so you're not ready to worship the Lord. A lot of rules about that. John the Baptist was another Nazarite. And you know, when you read about John the Baptist, he looked different. You know, he looked wild. He had wild look in his eyes. He had long hair, and, you know, ate locusts and honey, and wore, you know, animal skins and things like that. Rough hewn clothes, man of the desert. So we don't know what Samson looked like, but you can a couple of things we know. One is he was a big man, kind of the Hercules of his time, you know, strong, obviously probably very attractive with long hair, but also, you know, he was supposed to be dedicated to the Lord. And what we're going to see today is some of the things that should give us a little bit of understanding about not only Samson, but maybe some of the things that befell him work in our lives as well. So I'm going to read chapter 13, 24 and 25, which really sets the stage for today. The woman gave birth to a boy and named him Samson. I mentioned before that Samson means sunny, S-U-N-N-Y, or bright, brightness. He grew up, and the Lord blessed him, and the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him when he was in Mahane Dan, between Zorah and Eshtel. The word stir in him really has its origins in the, read my own writing here, has its origins in the musical business. When you, this word is the same word for tuning an instrument. So the Lord begins to stir in him, much like you would tune a harp or something else, which probably means he began to feel the presence of the Lord, but his utterances and so forth weren't in perfect tune, but you could see things moving in his life. And that's important to understand. So the Spirit of the Lord began to stir in him. Now, there's a gap between chapter 13 and 14. We don't know how long it is, but in chapter 14, Samson is a young man. So we can only assume that he was raised according to the way the angel of the Lord told his mother to raise him as a Nazirite, you know, and all the things about him dedicated to the Lord. And we see in chapter 14, it says, Samson went down to Timnah and saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. A couple of things here. One is, in that culture, the mother and father were the ones that set up the wedding. So they would find an appropriate man or woman and they would arrange a wedding. And the children probably had some say in it, but probably not a whole lot. And so that was fairly normal. But what's not normal, and I want to just call your attention to it now a little bit, and we'll see it more pronounced as we go forward. It says, Samson saw there a young Philistine woman. When he returned, he said to his father and mother, I have seen a Philistine woman in Timnah. Now get her for me as my wife. It's pretty clear here, Samson has his own view of what he wants. And he's not letting his mother and father participate in that thing. And some of your translations may add the idea that he saw and he liked what he saw. And that's sort of part and parcel to the understanding here. But I just want to point out that one of the things that is the undoing of a lot of people is what they pay attention to. You know, we're given blessings by being able to see, but what we focus on and what we put in our mind sometimes is very detrimental to us. And we see that in today's world with people looking at pornography and other kinds of things because it appeals to them, their eyesight, their appeals to their emotional side, and it begins to alter who they are and what they do and how they act. This will be the first time we'll begin to see a little bit of that in Samson. His father and mother replied, probably like any of us would, isn't there an acceptable woman among your relatives or among all of our people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to get a wife? So understand here, he's raised dedicated to the Lord. He's raised in a way that makes him obey the Lord. One thing we need to understand is the Lord's call for them was not to marry outside their race, not to marry outside with the all the indigenous tribes. So right there, he knew, and they knew, that he was running afoul of one of the Lord's commands to them. But they, so they make the point to him. And it says, but Samson said to his father, get her for me. She's the right one for me. And then verse 4 in parentheses, because we know that that's not God's will generally, says his parents did not know that this was from the Lord, who was seeking an occasion to confront the Philistines, for at that time they were ruling over Israel. So let me kind of explain that a little bit. God will give us instruction. Sometimes when we choose not to follow it, he will let us go our own way, and he will use that as part of his plan. And that's what this is here. He's using, he knew Samson's outside, and I made this point last week, and I'll make it again. Samson looked like a Nazirite, but what you look like on the outside is a far cry from how you are on the inside. And his two calls from the Lord were to follow a Nazirite life and be holy and blameless before God. So we begin to see where Samson is got the outside fine, but the holiness part is giving him some trouble. And we begin to see him drift away. And verse 5 says, Samson went down to Timnah together with his father and mother. As they approached the vineyards of Timnah, suddenly a young lion came roaring towards him. Now, he's not with his mother and father right now. They must be ahead or behind, or I'm not sure why. It says, the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power. not in mind, but in power, so that he tore the lion apart with his bare hands as he might have torn a young goat. So this mountain lion comes down and attacks him, and he, with his bare hands, he tears it apart, rips its legs off, you know, whatever you do to tear an animal apart. You would look at that and you'd say, well, a mighty warrior, you know, he's able to defend himself against lions, and I'm sure big stories wouldn't be made out of that. And it says, but he told neither his father nor his mother what he had done. Why do you think that is?
He was ashamed.
Well, probably.
Because, I mean, he's already been told by his family that he's going to be set apart, I'm sure. So showing that kind of anger, I would think he would believe it would be wrong.
Well, we'll see later, Samson is ruled by his emotions. His brain doesn't kick in until long after his emotions have driven his actions. So kind of an unfortunate situation for him. And then it goes on. I'm going to come back and talk about why he didn't tell them more in a minute. Then he went down and talked with the woman, and he liked her, my translation says. Sometime later, when he went back to marry her, he turned aside to look at the lion's carcass. In it was a swarm of bees and some honey. Now, I don't know if any of you noticed this or not when you're outside in the woods, but if there's anything like a little snake or a chipmunk or something that dies, bees are all over it immediately. You know, they're stinging it. They'll eat the whole snake. If it's a small snake, they'll eat it. 10, 15 bees will go through it in a little bit of time. So there's bees that are beginning to build a nest in there, a hive. And, of course, they're eating the flesh of the lion, and they're making honey. And it says, it was a swarm of bees and some honey, which he scooped out with his hands and ate as he went along. When he joined his parents, he gave them some, and they too ate it. But he did not tell them he had taken the honey from a lion's carcass. One of the things I mentioned before, and this is kind of a little subtle thing, is a Nazirite can never become ceremonially unclean. And by touching a dead anything, he became ceremonially unclean. Now, he didn't, you know, and I mentioned before, there are rules. For example, if you're out hunting with your father and he keels over and falls on you, you can go get yourself cleaned and blessed by a rabbi and certain things you do to get back clean. But if you willfully touch something dead, then you become ceremonial unclean and you've really violated the law of Nazirites. And so he, not only when he killed the lion, which before, but now that he's come back, the honey was so interesting to him, he reached in, and it's got to been a while because they don't make honey that fast. So he reaches in and there's enough for him to scoop out in his hand, and he eats it as he walks along and gives it to his mother and father, and they also eat it. And of course, the subtle side of that is, you know, his sin of violation of his oath, his purity, he passes on to his mother and father as he takes the stuff. That's why he's not talking to them about it, because they would be horrified. They're godly people, and so they would be horrified by this. In verse 10, it says, now his father went down to see the woman, and Samson made a feast, which was customary for bridegrooms. So the word translated feast, I don't know whether yours has a different translation in there, but the word translated feast is a word that means food and spirits. So they were throwing a party, and it was a, you know, probably not like we would throw here at church, but it's a party which the bride, bridegrooms, all the people were coming. It was a big celebration. You got to understand that in that culture, weddings were a big deal for the family, and they celebrated the weddings for 7 days before the bride and groom went off. So there was a whole preparation time and a whole celebration.
The
men and women were separated, but the feasts were, you know,
for both.
And so it was kind of a raucous affair if you study history. And it says, when he appeared, he was given 30 companions. Now, he didn't bring any groomsmen down. And so the bride's family gets 30 guys to be his companions. And they're probably going to not only guard him to make sure nothing happens to him, but also to be there to help him and do whatever he needs help, you know, in the wedding ceremony and all that kind of stuff. And so 30 companions. Verse 12. Let me tell you a riddle. Turn this page here. Samson said to them, if you can give me the answer within 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linens, 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. If you can't tell me the answer, you must give me 30 linen garments and 30 sets of clothes. So I don't know what the deal is about a riddle, you know, but it's fairly common challenge to people. And of course, they couldn't laugh it off. They took it. And so they basically took the challenge. And of course, they tried, you know, they tried to answer the riddle. And the riddle is, they say, tell us your riddle, let's hear it. So he replied, out of the eater, something to eat, out of the strong, something sweet. And of course, he's talking about the young lion, he's talking about the honey. But they don't know that. He hasn't told his parents, he hasn't told anybody what he did. It says, for 3 days, they could not give the answer. On the fourth day, they said to Samson's wife, coax your husband into explaining the riddle for us, or we will burn you and your father's household to death. Did you invite us here to rob us? Kind of gives you a little idea of the culture in this place. And I mentioned before, not a healthy place to live, you know. And Samson, for all of his troubles, was raised in a strictly Jewish home, raised in a faithful way by his mother and father, raised as a Nazarite. And it's, you know, and I guess what that tells me is even as bad as the world gets around us, we can still follow the Lord. We can still respect him and follow the Lord. And that's the way they raised Samson. The other thing it tells me is that I don't care how much time and energy you put into a child, sometimes they don't go the way you want them to go. And sometimes they veer off. Hopefully they come back. But, you know, people have their own minds about things, and regardless of how you've raised them, sometimes they don't follow that. And Samson is a pure example of that. Then I guess the age-old issue comes up here. Then Samson's wife threw herself on him, sobbing, you hate me. You don't really love me. You've given my people a riddle, and you haven't told me an answer. You know? And I could make a few comments here, but I'm going to just stay out of this. But he deals with it, but he doesn't deal with it real well for real long. And he says, I haven't explained it to my father or mother, so why should I explain it to you? She cried the whole 7 days of the feast. So on the seventh day, he finally told her because she continued to press him. She, in turn, explained the riddle to her people. Couple things here. One is, you know, one of the reasons God didn't want them marrying outside was that their allegiances, the brides or husbands or whoever it was, would be to their folks, not to God and not to God's people. And we see that here. You know, she used her charms and her crying to get an answer from him. Which, you know, I'm sure none of you ladies ever do that with your husbands. But typically they give in, right? So that's not different here with Samson. Before sunset on the seventh day, the men of the town said to him, what is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion? So they answered his riddle. Now Samson... maybe stupid in some ways, but he's not stupid in all ways. And he says to them, I love this little phrase here. If you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. So let me say two things. plowing with a heifer was illegal because it was a young animal. You couldn't do that. You had to plow with an adult ox or whatever. But more than that, it was kind of an idiom, apparently, in Hebrew, that meant you went behind my back. You did something that you shouldn't have done behind my back. But it is kind of a funny saying, you plowed with my heifer. You would not have obtained the riddle. But nevertheless, they solved the riddle, so Samson's obligated to provide them 30 sets of linen clothes. So what does he do? Then the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power again, and he went down to Ashkelon. And if you know anything about Israel, Gaza is here, which was the main area of the Philistines. Up along the coast is Ashkelon. Ashkelon was also a city of the Philistines. There are really four cities of the Philistines, but Ashkelon and Gaza were the two main ones. So he goes up 50 miles north upon the coast. He says he went out to Ashkelon, struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of their belongings, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. So here's Mr. Set Apart. Here's Mr. Holy to the Lord, who's not only touched a dead animal, who's not only consorted outside of the faith that he has, but now he's gone out and he's, to solve a problem he's had, he's gone to kill people just to get their clothes.
But don't you think that's how sin works?
Oh, it is.
Start small, and in this situation, it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, you commit a sin, and then that sin forces another sin, and then it forces a lie, and then it forces another sin. Wait.
Each time the Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power and enabled him to do these two things also. Kind of seems a little strange, but once he started on this path, the Lord allowed him to continue on that until he struck rock bottom or something, perhaps. I'm not sure. And the first one, when the lion got him, it looked like the lion was going to attack him, so he was defending himself there. But the Lord enabled him to do both of those Samson may have wanted, he was burning with anger. He wanted to do it anyway, but the Lord helped him.
I think the point is the Lord filled him with power because the Lord had plans for him, and he didn't want him to die or get killed until his plans were fulfilled. And so, you know, I think the point of that is that God will use us even in our sins if we're part of a larger plan for him, and his will be accomplished. Even if we're not willing participants, we will be participants in the weave that he makes, you know, to get his will done.
Even back in verse 4, though, it says, and this was when Samson had demanded the second time, get her for me. Verse 4 says, his parents did not know that this was from the Lord.
Right.
So, you know, God uses, like you say, our sins, but sometimes he lets us fall further into them.
Oh, he does.
But he can turn them on a dime.
Looks like he even leads us into them.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah. So he empowered him in power. But it makes a point that it empowered him really to protect him from harm. But it didn't empower his thought process or his understanding of the Lord's will. It just empowered his ability, which is kind of interesting that it would make that comment. When we're done, I'm going to give you 8 things that I think are called out in these verses, and we'll talk about them. I don't have them written down to give you. I'll probably put them up on the website as just notes from today, so you can see them up there, or I can send them out either way. Struck down 30 of their men, stripped them of their belongings, and gave their clothes to those who had explained the riddle. Burning with anger, you see, this is one of Samson's big problems. He went to his father's house. So he took the clothes back, and his wife is there, and they've never consummated the marriage because that happens at the end of the seventh day. So rather than go see her, he goes home to his father's house and just leaves her there. And Samson's wife was given to the friend who had attended him at the wedding. So the girl's father makes an assumption about Samson and gives his bride away to another person. Seems like kind of an odd way to do things, but you know, again, the common culture there is different for sure than today. And then chapter 15, later on at the time of the wheat harvest, now I don't know how much longer this is, but the wheat harvest in that part of the world is around May and first part of June. And it's after the rainy season, so you know the rainy season has come and gone, now it's getting hot, the wheat has grown, it's turning the golden brown because there's no rain, and it's time for harvesting. But it's also a big fire hazard. So Samson takes a young goat, which was kind of a requirement for going back as a sacrifice. He was trying to go back as a sacrifice to his father-in-law. And he went to visit his wife. He said, "I'm going to my wife's room." But her father would not let him go in. "I was so sure you had thoroughly hated her," he said, "that I gave her to your friend. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead." I can't explain all this, but you know, the culture was different then, and you know, the girls had no choices of things. They were handed off to whoever the parents decided. And Samson says to him, "This time I have a right to get even with the Philistines." You know, this culture is a cause and effect culture. You know, you do something, they do something. You do something escalated, they do something escalated. And sooner or later you reach a point where you've gone to war, and that's really what's coming here. So he says to himself, I will really harm them, talking about the Philistines. So he went out and caught 300 foxes. The word could be hyenas, but more likely foxes. That's why they translate it here. Hyenas don't have the tail that foxes do. And he says, and it tied them tail to tail in pairs. Just think about that for a minute. How did he catch 300 foxes? And then tie them in knot by their tails. I mean, you know, he was resourceful. I'll give him that. He was resourceful. Still under the power. He had the catching fox power now. And then he fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. It burned up the shocks and the standing grain together with the vineyards and olive groves. So he basically burned the place down. He basically burned their barns, their storage facilities, their olive crops, their wheat shocks, their wheat grain. Pretty horrible thing to do. But, you know, he made a point to the Philistines.
And burning their olive trees, the wheat was 1 year.
The wheat was 1 year. The olive trees were multiple years because they... Mm-hmm. Replanting them took years for them to actually bear and get enough olives. So big, big problem. When the Philistine asks who did this, they were told, "Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his friend." His friend was probably one of the 30 that was given to him there. So it wasn't really a friend that he grew up with or childhood friend or anything like that. But he was one of his groomsmen, I would suspect. So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Pretty gruesome. Samson said to them, "Since you've acted like this, I won't stop until I get my revenge on you." He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Etam. So he goes down and he kills many of them for killing his wife and his father-in-law. And you know, it's not that he had great care for them. It was the principle of the thing that bothered him. And his anger was white hot. And so he acted it out. The Philistines went up and camped in Judah, spreading out near Lehi. The men of Judah asked, "Why have you come to fight us?" "We have come to take Samson prisoner," they answered, "to do to him as he did to us." Well, remember, the Philistines were rulers over the Jews at this time. Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Etam and said to Samson, "Don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over this? What have you done to us?" He answered, "I merely did to them what they did to me." It doesn't say this, but I think in my mind, when he says, "I merely did," he's basically justifying himself. He's basically saying, "I don't know what they're complaining about. I just did to them what I, you know, what they did to me." Not really true, but, you know, still in his mind, it was justified what he did. And they said to him, "We've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines." You'd think there'd be a big battle here, but there isn't. Samson says, "Swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves." "Agreed," they answered. We will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you." So they bound him with two new ropes and led him up from the rock. As he approached Lehi, the Philistines came towards him shouting. I'm sure they were shouting. They were yelling, you know, whatever they're going to do to him. They were making him really feel miserable right then. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him in power again. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. You know, catching foxes, taking the jawbone of a donkey. I mean, jawbone of a donkey is pretty good size, but still, you know, not that big, and killed. I mean, my guess is, you know, again, he was probably a physical specimen, tall guy, big, strong guy, unbelievable power, and mad. And that's not a good combination. And the Philistines were probably not armed to the teeth. They probably had, you know, some arms with them, but didn't seem to make any difference. He killed 1,000 of them. Then Samson says, "With a donkey's jawbone, I have made donkeys out of them." Your translation may have something a little different than that. But the point is, you know, he made donkeys out of them. "With a donkey's jawbone, I've killed 1,000 men." When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place is called Ramoth-Lehi, which means Jawbone Hill, by the way. What's interesting is they called the town Lehi, which means jawbone. So I don't know whether they named the town after this event or it was called that before. It's hard to know. But anyway, this place where he threw the donkey's bone is called Jawbone Hill. "Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord." This gives you a little bit of the arrogance of Samson. "You have given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised?" You know, he's really pleading his own, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, but he's, you know, he's kind of wah, you know, to the Lord about him being thirsty. "Then the God opened up a hollow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned and he revived. So the spring is called En Hakkor," which means calling spring, by the way. So he called on the Lord and the Lord produced a spring. It is there, still there in Lehi. No one knows where Lehi is exactly, so they don't know where this spring is exactly. And then chapter or verse 20 says, "Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines." We're going to stop here today. I'm not going to go on to the next one because I want to talk about Samson and Delilah in one discussion. A lot to talk about there. But so he goes on to become a judge. Now, my guess is he didn't change his looks. My guess is he kept the outside appearance of a Nazirite, but his inside appearance was not good. And I want to just go through, and they're kind of in my notes here, so I'm going to have to find them and go through. I want to say first, Samson was a blessed man. You know, we all wonder how you survive in a land of faithlessness, a land of apostasy. But he lived the best of life in one of the worst of times. And he was blessed. He was a miracle child, destined by God. He had godly parents. He was physically blessed, probably with strength and looks and power as well. He was raised in service to God and raised even in a wicked and apostate culture in a godly household. So he had all the blessings of life for a man at that time. And yet, he didn't do what he should have done. As a Nazarite, he was to be separated and holy before God. He had the separation part down. He looked different. He presented himself to the general public differently, but his heart was not pure. He was certainly not set aside for God's use. He was not holy in any respect. He had the look, but he had no holiness in his heart. You wonder how a man like that would just think about going off to the enemy's camp to find a wife, because he knew that would be not a godly thing, but that's what he does, and that's really what starts a lot of the problems. Samson was interested in her looks. He'd seen her, he liked what he saw, and he wanted her as his bride. And one of the things we see about Samson is his eyes get him in a lot of trouble. He's impetuous. He acts before he thinks. His emotions flare, and with his emotions come actions that are not blessed of God. But that's the way a lot of people who are very emotional are. You know, their emotions overrule their brains. So we've got to learn to control ourselves, and all of us need to do that, whether we're emotional or not. There are certain times when it flares in us for one reason or another, and we've got to really step back before we say the things that would likely spill out of our mouths, because we can't, you know, a word spoken is not taken back very easily, and so, you know, you don't want to do that. The other thing is, a parent may be totally committed to the Lord, but the child is going to go his own way. You can do what you can do, but you can't force godliness in a child. You can force actions until they get to a certain age, and then they'll do what their heart tells them to do, not what you've instructed them over the years. That's why so many times preachers' kids and deacons' kids and whatever rebel, because they've been held on a short leash until they're 20 years old. And then when they get away from the short leash, they go wild. Now, many times they come back, but it's not without a little heartbreak along the way for the parents and for the child as well. And that's kind of the way with Samson. The other thing I would say is Samson's life mirrored the failures of Israel. You know, he was supposed to be one thing, and he looked like that, but in his heart he wasn't. And he fell away, he walked away, he ran away, he did everything he knew, and then he called out to the Lord, you know, for help. And so he mirrored what was going on in the time of the judges. And I think that's one of the reasons why his story is told here in such detail. The other thing I would say is the failure of us to do God's will does not diminish his ability to do what his plan and purpose is, because his plan and purpose will happen with us or without us. And we can be there and we can be blessed by being part of his purpose, or we can run the risk of not doing that and taking the slings and arrows that comes because of our own choices. And then I'd say there's two more things. This one is kind of deceptive. One of the things about sin is, if God doesn't judge it immediately, you begin to think God doesn't care. And we see that, we wonder today why God doesn't take action, why God doesn't judge, why God doesn't do this, because people are clearly doing something that shouldn't be done. But what happens is God has a time for doing judgment, and that time will come when God's plan is there. And in the case of Samson, God was using him for another purpose. But Samson probably felt like, okay, he got the honey out of the thing, nothing happened. His, you know, God didn't pull his power away from him. He was still able to do what he was able to do. So God obviously didn't care. Maybe Samson elevated his own thought in his own power above whether God was really interested in that or not. That's a very dangerous place for any of us to be, where we begin to think we're bigger than God. God is putting up with us because he loves us so much he won't judge us. You know, and even though we do things deliberately, God's not going to judge us. And that's a fatal flaw for anybody. Not necessarily in the short term, but in the long term, it's a fatal flaw for people. Ecclesiastes 8:11 covers that too, if you want to go look at that when you have a chance. And then I would finish that by saying that when a person is so controlled by his emotions and anger, they do not gain any wisdom or insight from any failures they've had in the past. You know, they look upon it as a setback, but God's still with them and they're able to go forward. And they don't look back and say, maybe God's trying to teach me something in this area where I didn't succeed. Maybe it's something I need to pay attention to. But when you're ruled by your emotions, you don't pay much attention to those things that happen in your life. So next week we're going to see kind of the culmination of this in the story of Delilah. And you would read this story and you would ask yourself, and I said Samson wasn't totally stupid. In this story you might say he's crossed the line and he's now pretty much totally stupid. And he does things that you can't explain away. But yet that's the way sin is. You know, you start something and then sooner or later you get to a point where you say, I can't believe I'm doing this. But I've got to do it. You know, all the lies I've done so far, all the things I've done, put me in a spot where I've got to finish. And that's kind of the way Samson is. And now he's not stating it, but it's the way he is in his own mind. So I would ask you to read the story of Delilah, Samson and Delilah. And I'll try to get 16 and 17 done, not next week, but the week after when I come back. And so remember, next week, Vicki and I are going to be in North Carolina. Randy will be teaching. I'm sure it's an enthralling subject. I don't know what it is, but he will be teaching you. So I hope you come and support him in that effort. And I'll publish a list of the times that we're going to be here and not here, you know, so you can see that as well. Any questions or comments? Any thoughts? Anything I didn't cover that you want to cover? Okay. Let's have a word of prayer and then we'll get upstairs. Lord, I'm thankful for the fact that you've opened your word to us and we've read. And Lord, as best we can, we've tried to understand the story of Samson. We can make application to our own lives in terms of what we do, what we look like, and how we act versus who we are inside. And Lord, I pray that as we make mistakes in our lives, that we will never fail to look for what you're doing and how we can learn from those mistakes and never do them again. Lord, I pray for each of us as we go through this week, that you'll be with us and guide us and give us direction where we need it. Lord, I pray for the service to come. I pray for the pastor as he speaks your word. I pray for those who sing, for those that pray. And Lord, I just pray that everything that happens in this service brings people to a point of seeing you, feeling your presence, and Lord, having things to apply in their life that are personally tailorable to them. Lord, I pray that we're all blessed by being in the house of the Lord today. And I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you all very much.